just John Johnson from Kitchewa Earth Person. You were telling us that you had been trying to join the march this morning, the just sort of people gathering and peacefully marching through the city. And when you arrived there, what did you see?
Basically, we got there late, and it appeared as if the majority of the folks who were in the march had been corralled very tightly by just a row of baton-wielding riot police. And they were basically smooshed up against a Citibank window. And there were rumors that one of the windows had been broken, and one cop tried to tell me, and then they had other cops come in. So what happened was there was a row of cops facing the group, corralling them, and then a row of cops facing everybody else, which was media and spectators and activists. And this one cop was like, yeah, they broke windows, so we're going to arrest them all. And, I don't know what happened because I didn't see anything like that. And, at one point somebody chucked a smoke bomb over there and everybody freaked out, and the cops basically widened their perimeter, pushed us all back, and our group decided just to leave at that point. And we kind of wandered around and hooked up with some other people and went down to Freedom, tried to go to Freedom Plaza. And the cops, in my opinion, were fairly successful in controlling folks and corralling people into Freedom Plaza, which was where we were going to go anyway. And then after that, they surrounded one half of Freedom Plaza. It's like dissected by a street. I don't know what the name of the street is. And they kind of, our affinity group was kind of paying attention to what the cops were doing, really for our own sake. We're not really plugged into any kind of network or anything. But basically, when we saw that perimeter being established, we were worried that they were going to do what they'd done to the Snake March, which is basically corral everybody and arrest everybody. So we bolted across the street safely. And then a group of people, some of whom escaped from that corral, and then other people who never made it in, were on the other side of Freedom Plaza. We pulled a nifty little diversion when the cops started moving in into Freedom Plaza. We went and blockaded the intersection so that some of them had to come to deal with us. And I don't know if that helped anybody get out or not. And at that point, the cops started trying to corral our side of Freedom Plaza. And they were get out of the streets, get out of the streets. But they totally came up onto the sidewalks and kept pushing and hitting us with batons and stuff like that. This one big burly cop got me a good jab right there with his hand right on my throat.
While you were on the sidewalk?
While I was on the sidewalk. And they're saying, get off the streets, get off the streets. And we're like, we're on the sidewalk, And so there's more jabbing and hitting. And then basically the kind of group tried to escape, the whole group, not just our affinity group, and tried to continue kind of marching around. We're totally corralled back into the plaza. And at that point, our affinity group was like, we're going to get the hell out of here because we don't want to go to jail. And so we made a break for it, and some of us got out then and some of us didn't. But basically, our whole affinity group was able to get out eventually. So, and I haven't heard exact numbers, but I understand that there were hundreds of people arrested down there. And one of the organizers just told me that the media, mainstream media, is reporting that 500 people are in jail or on their way to jail. So I don't really know, how accurate that is or what. And it just seems like from the size of the crowd that I witnessed at the Convergence Center last night and the size of the crowd that's here is that a lot of people are in jail. And I think my personal feeling is that it really was a deliberate attempt on the part of the police to take advantage of possibly some not too well thought out plans on our part to basically clear the streets and take the most radical elements out of tomorrow's mass mobilization. So I don't know, that's how I see it.
How did the police tactics that you saw today compare with other ones that you've seen used?
It was more aggressive today and less willing to kind of let people go. People were very clearly saying to the police, we want to go home. And they were too bad, go back that way. And it was like obviously, you know, small groups of people who were wanting to splinter off and get out. And they just wouldn't let it happen. I mean, I had to literally like run around this motorcycle cop. And he eventually like hit some of my friends with his baton. But I took off. And they made it out eventually. So.
You see quite a bit of police brutality.
I didn't see too much. I mean, I definitely saw some excessive stuff and was on the receiving end of what I felt was like excessive force. So, I mean, but that's kind of par for the course with these things. So.
Jump in here. If you want to introduce yourself, go ahead. Do you mind being videotaped and recorded?
Yeah.
And if you want to character, you can feel free to jump in again too. Characterize the response of the cops in relation to what the actual activity of the protesters was.
I basically agree with John in some ways. Like the way that they penned us all in, like they did that like at least on three separate occasions, just outside of Franklin Square, down at Freedom Plaza, and then also a couple of blocks down from Freedom Plaza. And they were like, the whole point was to like just trap everyone and like get them all, you know, under arrest. There were like some incidents that I saw that were like really excessive. Like this one time a group of protesters like tried to break the perimeter that the police had like set up, and a bunch of motorcycle cops came chasing after them. And they were like, the protesters were running and the motorcycle cops were like right on their tail. They were like 3 feet behind them, and they kept on like revving up their engines and like butting right up against the protesters as they were running. And it was really dangerous. Like the police could have very easily, like at that point, have like killed someone if any of the protesters had like stopped or tripped or something like that, you know. So that was like really excessive. They also used percussion. They also used those sound grenades. I saw them use the sound grenades once. They tear gassed the protesters once too when they were penned up over by Franklin. And there really wasn't any need to tear gas them, and there certainly wasn't any need for the concussion grenades. They were just, you know, the protesters were marching, and they didn't want them to go that way, and they told them to stop, and the protesters didn't stop, so then they used a concussion grenade, and it was totally unreasonable, you know. And they had, like, I mean, they were totally prepared, too. I mean, they had, like, their rubber bullet guns, and they, you know, they're armed with tear gas, and they had out, like, the armored cars and the horses and the full riot gear. You know, it was just, it was totally, like, overwhelming show of force for, like, you know, people who just had, like, plastic drums, you know.
Any questions?
No, that's...
Anything else that you want to add to the events this morning and what happened? Even if you want to just talk about what the protesters did, even in a positive light, per se, like that the protesters were doing.
No, I mean, it was what we were doing was, like, totally cool. We were trying to reclaim the streets and, you know, celebrate creative resistance. And there were, like, all kinds of great ideas. Lots of autonomous actions happened before the gatherings this morning. And it was really cool, just very cool. And I'd also like to mention that there's a great workshop going on right now all day, hosted by Mobilization for Global Justice, about the effects of the World Bank and the IMF on indigenous communities around the world, and I'm planning on going to that now. Yeah.
Yeah. Hear at all about anything else? So, are you ready?
Yeah.
So, just as briefly as you want, but you've been going to some of these what's the called again?
Yeah, it's the Mobilization for Global Justice. It's day three of the workshop on ending the oppression of the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, and the IMF.
And so if you could just give us an idea of the connections between these protests with the sort of resistance that's been talked about that's going on around the world against these sort of institutions and policies.
Oh, yeah. No, it's totally exactly the same kind of, like, expression of resistance. I mean, today, like, there was a guy from Chiapas who came in, and he was talking about, like, the resistance of the people of Chiapas to the Mexican state, to the federal troops of Mexico, and to multinational corporations who are, like, trying to get at the Lacandon jungle, where there's over 9,000 different kind of plant species that are used in, like, herbal medicine and used in herbal healing. And multinational corporations want to get into the Lacandon jungle, and they want to, like, You know, they want it for its timber, they want it for its natural resources, and they want to disrupt, like, a traditional way of life that people have lived for over 500 years. And the people are, like, resisting it. You know, they form autonomous collectives. They refuse to pay their taxes. They refuse to participate in the government. And they're forming an impressive resistance to the efforts of the nation state and the multinationals to try to, like, take away their autonomy and to destroy the ecosystem in the process. And it's, like, so inspiring to hear about their successes. That's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, did you identify? Did you already say your name?
I'm Chris Lugo from Nashville, Tennessee.
Into our mind, we pretend to take the side, but we know that's a lie. Time to start asking why. I was playing when they died.
What?
Hey.
Hey. Do you need to know where the jail is? The kids are being held. The Boo something.
We're not from DC. He's not from DC either, but.
We don't want your racist war! 1, 2, 3, 4! We don't want your racist war! 1, 2, 3, 4! We don't want your racist war! You don't get it!
Mark one, you don't get it, you don't get it. Mark one, you don't get it, you don't get it.
All right, identify yourself or not, but at least give some noise so I can get a level.
Okay, my name's Will from New York City.
All right, you want to talk about the actions today?
Sure. Early on, it seemed like the police were using a pretty hands-off approach. Obviously, the people I was with didn't get arrested. We had some mild confrontations with the police, channeling us into the directions they wanted us to go, surrounding us. And, you know, it causes a lot of anxiety because the D.C. police have been known to, you know, corral tons of protesters at once and just do mass arrests. So we were trying to avoid that. But apparently, the more we find out, the more we know that, there have probably been at least 500 arrests this morning. There was a snake march sponsored by the Anti-Capitalist Convergence, and apparently that was completely shut down, and at least around 150 people were arrested with that. There was a critical mass bike rally. Not sure how many people, but that went for a while successfully until the police just decided that they had enough and they arrested all those people. There was a pagan block that was assembled at DuPont Circle, which is where we were, completely peaceful. And they, as soon as they started marching off, they got rounded up and arrested. We were at DuPont Circle with some banners and posters, basically just, holding them for traffic. And we were distributing leaflets, and the reception was very good. Most people were interested in reading the leaflets we were handing out and were very receptive and interested. We were handing out stuff that was, against the war on Iraq. And so anyway, while we were doing that, we heard news that, the snake march was being corralled and arrested. So we were trying to go to where they were to try to observe or do some kind of solidarity. We never got there, but we ended up getting kind of corralled towards Freedom Park, Freedom Square. And there, it was mass confusion. There were police everywhere in riot gear, and they were totally, telling us where to go. And at least half of the mass of people that were arrested there, which were in, an adjacent area, they were mass arrested. And where we were was a really big area, and I don't think the police could completely surround it. So some people escaped arrest, but it was just pretty arbitrary and random. The worst case of police violence that I've heard about, and this is just hearsay, but apparently there was a woman who got beaten or clubbed and had a severe facial injury, and she was bleeding from the face, and she was denied medical attention by the police, and I guess she was arrested.
Was there other cases of police violence, and can you comment on not only the violence but also the arrest, the total reaction of the police in relation to what the activities of the protesters were?
Yeah, I haven't seen that much overt police violence. I mean, they were getting pretty physical with us, pushing us around, sometimes picking people up, where they had opportunities to arrest us, but none of us were arrested. But yeah, there was one case of, I think, some activists smashed some windows at Citibank, and we were not there to see that, but apparently I'm sure that it was pretty violent, because I think some people that did that got arrested.
What was the general, and do you want to keep going, or do you want to make this, because it's sort of, we're talking about the tactic of having two different days of action, mm-hmm. and as far as a comment on our movement, how effective or ineffective, I mean, do you think it would have been better for us all? I know there's some, conversations within about diversity of tactics, but right. To have it all in one day.
Right. Well, yeah, it's difficult. I mean, the IMF World Bank protest is, those actions are focused tomorrow, and today is more or less anti-war theme. Both of them are very pressing issues. I mean, just because the IMF and bank are meeting right now, and plus, with Bush's rhetoric about going to war on Iraq, it's also very urgent. So it does, there's so much going on right now, it's kind of overwhelming. There was supposed to be what's called like a die-in today at Freedom Square, I think, where people were going to lay down, some of them in the street and stuff, and that was like totally preempted by the police. Like, it couldn't happen. So like, there's so many events planned right now that it's kind of overwhelming. It has its pluses and minuses. Like, it prevents too many people from being in one place. And it seems like policing tactics, at least in New York, and it seems here too, have really been to like channel protesters into protest pens, where, you know, they're allowed to do to some extent what they want in the protest pen, but they aren't given much freedom of movement, and it's kind of like silencing their voices in a lot of ways. But so it's not really clear. It's I think both of these issues are pressing right now.
You know what? I didn't realize there was two different issues. I thought it was more diversity of tactics, the anti-capitalism was mobilized. So I didn't. That's my own miseducation.
There's definitely a diversity of tactics theme going on still, because the two main groups that are mobilizing now are Mobilization for Global Justice and the Anti-Capitalist Convergence. And there is a little bit of disparity between their tactics, but there's also overlap. You know, people work with both groups. The Mobilization for Global Justice people are more focused on strictly nonviolent and non-confrontational activities, marches and things like that. ACC people are a little more confrontational, you know, wanting to do direct action tactics. And, I don't think that the two tactics necessarily contradict each other. I think that both are needed. And there's been a lot of respect, I think, from both sides for respecting that diversity of tactics. So I don't think it's a problem so far.
And finally, if you want to make one more comment of why you're here, it obviously has to do with certain issues and also with such a direct action movement in general. Why are you here?
Right. Well, I'm here because, to protest, to try to prevent our country from waging war in Iraq. And, I think the consequences, and, I'm not the only one that thinks this. All kinds of people from all across the political spectrum believe that if this war does happen, that it can possibly destabilize the entire Middle East region, and the consequences could be totally disastrous. So, with Bush's rhetoric and so forth, it's pretty obvious that just, people resisting just by saying that they don't think it's a good idea is not going to be enough. I mean, he's made it clear that he wants to go ahead with it, regardless of what kind of support he gets from the Congress. You know, he wants to override, you know, the UN and whoever. I mean, so it's kind of like a double unilateral. It's almost like Bush unilateral, not just the US, you know. So even though there's been so much resistance to him, I think that this kind of thing needs to happen to put the brakes on. And, unless people are in the streets protesting and stuff, I don't think that the administration will respond to just something like public opinion. There has to be, like, direct action and serious engagement. So that's why I'm here, and also because I oppose the policies of the IMF and World Bank, and I'm an anti-capitalist, and I think that really what's being called the anti-globalization movement is really an anti-capitalist movement developing. So.
Thank you very much. And now there's a press conference.
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right.
Who should I be looking at?
You can look at him because I'm just audio.
Okay.
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay. My name is Zain El Amin. I'm with the Anti-Capitalist Convergence. And we just finished a press conference, and I think a couple of things have to be emphasized. One thing is that today's actions are not the beginning or are not the end of a project, really. It's actually the beginning of several autonomous actions that hopefully will sprout out from this action. I think people should go back to their communities, retain their affinity groups, and do organize against the war, this imminent war that's going to destabilize the world. So it shouldn't be looked in the context of the numbers that showed up of the arrestees, but rather that the message that we got across. And that message wasn't just a message that we put out today, which we did, but also in the lead-up organizing efforts. Again and again, we managed to get out to our communities and to the nation the issues that we're protesting about, despite all the hurdles that the media put in front of us. We kept on turning the issues from us condemning or condoning violence, that's the way they wanted to phrase it, to the issues of the World Bank and the IMF, to the issue of capitalism and war, and how all of those tied together. For example, we kept on pushing the issue that that the war on Iraq is completely interrelated with the World Bank and IMF, because there are countries that are now being coerced. Basically, the U.S. is using the World Bank and IMF as instruments of coercion to get support that for a war that the people of this world will not support. And by tying it that like that, people wanted to know what else the World Bank and IMF. And this proves that containing yourself to just the issues of the World Bank and IMF is actually a handicap. Taking on the larger analysis is what explains to everyday people what's going on. If you talk about globalization, it'll take you for a long time to get that word out of abstraction. But if you talk about capitalism, and when you talk about the World Bank and IMF stealing $57 million a year in property and profit taxes from the citizens of the city, that's capitalism, because the way we have to couch things now is not structural adjustment programs. That's abstraction. We have to talk about trickle-down policy. And that's what's been pushed down for decades by president after president. People understand that. Trickle-down policy is stuff the fat cats, and crumbs are surely to fall on the poor. And we see the devastation that's caused in the city, and the World Bank and IMF are imposing trickle-down policy on the world. And that's the way it should be explained, pure and simple.
Do you think that you were able to fully exercise your First Amendment rights today? Do you think that it was a tactic of preemptive arrests to keep you from articulating these views?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, note that the first attack was on the Snake March, which was going to go straight to the heart of corporate greed, which Americans are reeling from. And Americans will be reeling more from it next month when their 401k quarterly reports will come in and they'll find out that they've been slashed again. And when the unemployment figures are going to come out in October, Americans are going to be reeling. And the authorities knew to keep that march from going down to the symbols of corporate greed. That was the first thing shut down. The second thing is, note that the bike strike, it went all over the city, and once they wanted to come to Freedom Plaza to join the other crowd, that's when they shut it down, because they wanted to make the anti-war statement smaller and say and dismiss it as there's nobody for the war. So they shut down the bike strike right next to Freedom, right before it got to Freedom Plaza. So it was really a preemptive strike against democracy. And I just heard, a Reuters reporter just told me that this issue has provoked debate among just every people that are walking by, that are hearing the news. And hell, if it's going to take mass arrests to bring the issue of how our civil rights are being stealthily eroded, then let it be. We have to do that, because otherwise they'll just erode slowly, and next thing we know, we're in a police state. But this brings it to the forefront. Say, look what's happening. You know, this magnifies the issue for people to see, even with their daily grind, with their daily rat race, they can see that clearly.
Has anybody looked into whether the city of D.C. Took out one of those liability insurance policies against civil rights violations like Philadelphia did a couple of years ago?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't have any information on that.
Do you believe that there's grounds for a lawsuit for violating civil rights, First Amendment rights, other rights of the ACC and the other protesters today?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, This time around, we have ample evidence in the form of mass media tapes and articles where again and again we laid out our tactics and dismissed the myths that are being passed about us by the police, sort of trying to frame us as violent or providing cover for bad people to do bad things. And that documentation is going to help any, I think, any court case, any lawsuit. And also because I feel that we won the PR battle this time around, because Ramsey, every year he goes uncontested. He starts 2 months before and starts, I'm talking about Chief Ramsey for people that are not in Washington, D.C., the chief of police here in D.C., but he starts on a PR campaign 3 or 4 months before the demonstrations, and he goes uncontested. Well, plainly, we kicked their asses in the PR battle, despite every anchor person trying to trip us up and trying to set the parameters for the debate on their own grounds. And that's why they went from, first of all, saying that we don't care about the security of this capital and this nation. That's what Ramsey said, which actually contradicts his statement of April 2000, that I love protesters. That's what he told the Washington Post, and that without protesters, I wouldn't be the chief of police. He's got to decide on what set of lies he has to pursue, you know, and because it's confusing right now. But the point is that we won the PR battle, and we have ample evidence for any lawsuit that might be used. And And we just, for one thing, people should understand, should not give up hope. We know that the media is skewing, the mass media is skewing things, but people should be more firm with their message. If we were to do this again, and when we do this again, that at every action, whatever it may be, we need to have the message right there, all over that action. What is this about? Why are we sitting in the streets? Is it war, the World Bank, IMF, corporate greed? That message has to be loud and clear, and that's one thing we need to keep on doing.
Do you think that the rest of the protests this weekend are going to have the same police tactics applied to them? And if not, why do you think it was that the ACC may have been specifically targeted with these preemptive mass arrests?
I don't know whether there will be the same kind of arrests or anything like that. But people should be grateful to the ACC. Any groups that are going to be protesting in the upcoming days should be grateful, because we really gave them a run for their money. We really exhausted them, and they won't have as much energy to repress people tomorrow. But as we've seen in the permit process, like for people that are so obedient in terms of following the letter of the law, even with MGJ, they gave them hell in terms of the permit process. You know, and so it just shows that they don't care about what's... But one thing that helped, and I didn't finish my thought earlier, but the fact that right before the events, a couple of days before the events, the rhetoric on the police changed. They started talking about, we don't believe that the protesters are going to be violent. They've disavowed violence. And the mayor... yesterday, said that civil disobedience is okay, you know, which is a big change. I thought he's going to be talking about preemptive stuff like they were talking when we started mobilizing, that we need to do preemptive action. But he said that civil disobedience is okay as long as people aren't hurt in the process. And that surprised me, because I thought that he was just going to follow the rhetoric, but it just shows that he couldn't get away with it. Our message was too loud in the community. And one myth that needs to be dispelled, and one of them is, you know, like Mark Fisher, the columnist here, who attacks the movement every year, whether it's the ACC, Mobilization for Global Justice, whatever, is that the ACC is not a group that organizes things, you know, once a year and they pop up. They're involved in fighting for alternatives to incarceration. They're involved in delivering groceries to low-cost housing in the Shaw neighborhood. They're involved in pro-Palestinian solidarity work. They're involved in housing issues, housing takeovers. You know, so they're engaged in the community as opposed to the myth that's being passed about them, that they're whiny kids just complaining about things and being idealistic. They're engaged every day in the community. And the divide between the community and activists is not so much that they're detached from it and not engaged in it. It's the fact that people are so beaten down that they need to see an example, a winnable example to follow. So they agree with the ideas of the ACC. They just don't know how, they just want to be sure that they can win if they go out there. And that's the divide. Yeah. Okay, excellent.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Names and where you're from?
My name is Eugene Coveos and I came down from New York City.
My name's Will and I'm from New York City.
And what brought you here to D.C. today?
We're here. Friday is a day of protest against the Bush administration's plans to go to war on Iraq. So it's primarily a day of anti-war activities. But tomorrow is the big protest against the IMF and the World Bank. And so there are lots of activities kind of feeding off of each other. So.
We also came as New Yorkers to say not in our name to this war on the world that Bush is trying to wage, and also to come as students from the City University of New York, which is getting absolutely cut and underfunded, and they're raising the tuition, and CUNY is a school that used to be free, and we're here because the fight for CUNY is the globalization fight, and so we're here to represent that also, to say free CUNY.
Can we include you in as well? What's your name and why you're here?
I said what I wanted to say, so. That's all right.
All right.
Can you tell me just a little bit about your experiences here in the protest today?
Well, we certainly got corralled around a lot by the police, but as well as having them try and stopping us from having the empowering actions that we have, we've had a lot of really, really empowering moments where we took streets, where I think you could really feel in the actions the commitment of people, because this is only first steps. This is only the middle of the beginning. Sure.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Would you like to be someone from Jakarta?
Jakarta, yeah, sure.
Okay, that's the young lady over there.
Very good.
Yeah, on globalization.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yeah, he's doing it for everybody. Okay, yeah.
They make the right people so that they feel that they can't fit anymore.
Great. We actually don't know much about why you're here, so maybe you could identify your name if you would like. You don't have to. And where you're from and why you're here this weekend.
Yeah, my name is Yeni Rosa. I'm from Jakarta, Indonesia. I came here for, protesting this World Bank and IMF meeting, because in Indonesia, the IMF has dragged Indonesia into this debt trap. Into this, a trap of so severe that we cannot get out of that. The debt service ratio in Indonesia is more than 50% of our national budget. So in order to pay this 50% of debt, we have to cut all of the subsidy that before used to be built the health facilities for women and school for children, and subsidy for the gas. so we can have a cheaper transportation. Now the price in Indonesia is rising, and all of the the public facilities like the health and the school declining so much. So we are very, very poor in Indonesia, and we have to pay more than 50% of our national income annually to pay for the debt. I mean, we cannot breathe. We cannot do anything. I mean, the IMF for years has been trying to, force us with some suggestion about how to get out of that trap. But their suggestion is just making us getting more and more into debt and force us to sell all of our national assets, including, the oil companies, including the water companies, the telephone companies, and everything we can sell, we have to sell. Because if we do not sell, we cannot pay the debt. So the IMF forced us to sell everything we have so we can pay the debt. If we just have this debt cancellation, for example, we do not need to, to borrow more money, because this money that we borrow from, the World Bank and the bilateral and multilateral group of government that helping Indonesia, is even not enough to pay the debt. So, and if they say that it's because the corruption in Indonesia, the World Bank has been more than 30 years giving money to Indonesian corruptors without checking whether the money is used for the right purposes or not. Most of the money went into the pockets of, Suharto's regimes and allies. And now we are the people who have to pay the debt. The World Bank never consulting the people whether we want the debt, we want the money or not. They just give to the corruptors, corrupted by them, and then left us people with obligatory to pay the debt. Now, every baby that born in Indonesia has to pay a big amount of debt, probably every, in Indonesia, probably as much as 1 year salary of one person. I mean, every baby who's born, the newborn baby, has to already have the debt burden probably as big as an annual salary for a person.
How much, what has been privatized at this point? Has the privatization already completed, or is it in the process of?
It's still in process. For example, now there's a process of selling the cement factories. We have to sell the cement factory. Well, some of the cement factories was built on the land owned traditionally by the local people, what's so-called the traditional land rights. The people said that we only lend this land, we do not sell it. But the IMF forced Indonesian government to sell this factory, including the land. So it created a lot of unrest between the local people, saying that we don't sell any piece of this land. This is belong to us. It belong to our ancestor. But yeah, that's what happening. Now we sell everything what we can, just to pay the debt. If you can say that a country is like a house. Now we sell all the furniture, the television, the refrigerators, the bed, the gas stove, everything we have, we have to sell. We have to pay the debt.
We heard recently, and I don't know if you've heard about this at all, that there are some policies being encouraged by the World Bank and IMF that would change Indonesian labor law, so union organizing would be cut down on, and this is all talking about getting a more conducive business climate. Do you know anything about that, or does that make sense with what you're talking about?
Yeah, well, there's a new law concerning about the private company, for example. There's a law concerning this private company is loosening the government control over who can invest in Indonesia. In the future, we cannot control who will invest in Indonesia. I mean, it means that everybody can do that. And also, there will be laws that concerning like the quota of the goods that can come into Indonesia, for example, like rice, sugar, coffee, and everything. And in the future, in a couple of years, we cannot protect the product of Indonesian farmers because of that, because there's no protection for them. Now there's a big unrest amongst the sugar farmer in Indonesia, because so many sugar and rice farmer, because so many imported sugar and rice coming to Indonesia, and we have no law to we cannot have any law to protect it. So there's a big change in Indonesia concerning the laws. Also, there's a pressure to cut off the subsidy, example. Subsidy for gas, you know, oil, for subsidy for electricity, a subsidy for the telephone lines, subsidy for clean water. So now people have to pay more for transportation, much more for transportation, much more for electricity, much more for the water and telephone. In the villages, even in Java, not too far from Jakarta, probably about 60 kilos from Jakarta, in the villages, they start to voluntarily cut off their electric supply because they cannot afford to pay it now. It's about 200% rise of the electricity cost, and the people are so poor they cannot even afford to have like a single bulb in the middle of the sitting room, for example.
You've seen what's happened here this morning. I assume that you've kind of talked to some of the people and seen and heard what's been going on. Do you have anything that you'd like to say to people who are here, and also maybe to people who are interested in this issue but aren't out in the streets, in terms of like the way that it's impacting your country, what you'd like to see people do about it?
Well, I'm quite surprised to see that there are many people here in the United States, actually, especially the young ones, that concern about these issues. I mean, this is good for us because it makes us feel that we are not alone facing this World Bank and IMF. But I was also so surprised to see how the state apparatus handle them. I mean, because back in Indonesia, we always have this news that United States is the greatest democracy in the world. But the thing that I saw this morning is, wow. I mean, that's the kind of thing that happened in Indonesia under Suharto. I mean, wow. I mean, they get arrested just by, you know, beating drums, you know. And so many of them, and even women with babies and everything. Even in Indonesia, the police will not arrest women with babies. But I saw women with 2-year-old babies on the, you know, what is that?
Stroller.
Was arrested. I mean, this is, wow. I mean, this is really kind of shock for me, who has never thought that in this country, this kind of thing can happen too. I mean, I don't know whether this is just a recent trend or it's always be like this. But, first, I'm glad that there are many young people here in the United States also share our concern about this. But second, I was also shocked to see that, wow, the democracy thing that we got, you know, about impression about United States back in Indonesia is not really true.
Can you talk about street protest in Indonesia, how that's used, how many people get involved in that?
Street protest in Indonesia is, more or less like this. And surprisingly, the number of the police is also like this. I mean, here I saw the number of police kind of an outnumbering the number of the demonstrators. It's also happened in Indonesia. Now, of course, before Suharto stepped down, Indonesia, the situation is worse because it's not only the police that facing the demonstrators, but also the armies. The armies also the armies is on the front line to arrest the demonstrators, but now mostly are the police. The biggest problem now is there's some law in Indonesia saying that you are against the law if you're saying something or doing something that defaming the president or defaming the state state body, something like the parliament, for example. So they used to use this law to arrest people on the on demonstration and put them to jail. I mean, that's what
I'm wondering too, how we just were talking with some people at a Nike shareholder conference, and Nike has a bunch of factories in Indonesia, and these people were talking about that there was quite a lot of thousands and thousands of people out in the street to protest Nike's labor policies and the closing down of certain factories to relocate for better prices. And it seemed that a lot of people how common is it for street protests to be used as an organizing, like, you know, and to do with anti-globalization. I mean, can you relate it to the anti-globalization movement in the world right now?
Yeah, there are many street demonstrations. Especially the workers' demonstration is quite common in Indonesia. It's one of the means they use to, you know, to handle the conflict with the company. But now there's difficulties since many companies simply moving out the companies from Indonesia to, say, like Cambodia or Vietnam or China, because they can guarantee a lower workers' wage and higher security. Now, because of that phenomenon in Indonesia, the Ministry of we have like what's so called the Labor Minister. The Labor Minister started to have draw a new law that will suppress the labor protest in order to keep this investment inside Indonesia. And concerning that, the connections with the globalization and everything. These workers many of them still do this demonstration in the local way, you know, concerning the dispute with the company. But we have in Indonesia now a quite big like anti-debt coalition. The understanding about the connections of the debt and the poor conditions of people have to live right now is very clear. So there are some big demonstrations in Jakarta against the debt, against the World Bank and the IMF. Even our economic minister saying that the IMF has dragged Indonesia into this trap, that we have to disconnect our relation with the IMF. But they still have to discuss about this. And there's possibility that Indonesia will cut off the relation with the IMF, but we're not sure yet.
Are you with a particular organization? Do you work with a particular organization here or in Indonesia? You don't have to say it if not.
I'm part of I'm part of a women organization in Indonesia. Actually, I came here not specially for this World Bank and IMF thing. I came to New York for some women's network, but then I have to come here because of this.
Can you spell your name? So can we use your name in the record?
Okay, no problem. My name is Yeni Rosa. It's Yeni Rosa.
Thank you very, very much.